Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. I'm Tom Douglas.
I'm Terry Rotero, the chef in a hat.
We're coming to you from the Hot Stove Society, and we are happy to be here. Sad announcement, Katie O is no longer on the show. She left this week. She's moving on to bigger and better things. So it's super sad, and tried to talk her out of it, but no go. So we're just going to move on, and we have lots of guests today. We're going to have a good show, and we have one person in the audience that's threatening to leave because KDO is not here. So,
well, one out of 35 is pretty good.
Okay, today on the show, we have Lindsay Slavin from Twin Sisters Creamery. She is here to talk about pairing cheese with beer. We're going to answer your veggie questions on okra, eggplant, veggie broth, and more. Leslie Kelly joins us from the road. She's been on the road for months now, traveling around in her RV around the country, stopping in every food town in America. I keep getting pictures from all these crazy places, including the state of Delaware. So she was back there for a bit. She's going to tell us about the food movies happening at the Seattle International Film Festival. I was at one this last week called The Wild. You know,
yes,
Terry,
I was there.
We're co-executive producers of a movie called The Wild.
And, congratulations on that. It's a very good movie, and I recommend anyone to go see it.
Congratulations to the director and star of the movie, Mark Titus. He got a standing ovation at the end of that by about 300 guests.
Yeah.
And Sharon Baden is here of the Spanish Table. Formerly, it's now called the Paris Madrid Grocery. She's going to join us to share her tips on the perfect paella and other Spanish bites. I saw back there she's got some of that fancy Spanish ham, you know, the black... The black
Iberico.
The black pig ham, and I'm looking forward to tasting that. It's one of my favorites. So that's just the beginning of things. Of course, we've got some of our other typical adventures. Tina.
Yeah.
Are you going to take us down the path of ordinary to extraordinary?
I would be delighted to do so, and it's sort of selfish. I recently made a vegetarian lasagna, and I thought of both of you because it was not extraordinary. It was very ordinary.
Uh-huh.
So I would love your culinary tips on how to make an ordinary, bland old vegetarian lasagna delicious.
So do tell how you made it first.
So
what did you put in there?
I made the sauce myself. The
Bechamel?
No, it was red sauce.
Red sauce, okay.
San Marzano.
Right.
Tomatoes. I sauteed some garlic and onion, I believe, and put the tomatoes in there. That was kind of my base sauce. I used some basil and bay leaf. I'm trying to remember all the things that I did. Layered lasagna. It was not just vegetarian, you guys. It was vegan. So I made ricotta using cashew nuts and garlic powder, garlic powder, lemon, onion powder in the blender. Made it really creamy. It actually turned out pretty well. I did a layer of noodles, a layer of that, a little nutmeg on top of that, another layer of... then I did spinach, basil, and then
how did you
sauce.
Put your spinach? Were they sauteed or were they blanched?
I sauteed it with onion.
Okay.
What came out boring about it to you?
Was quite good. The sauce was quite good, but it just seemed very ordinary.
Uh-huh.
It was relatively bland.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So maybe you're missing a little extra seasoning and love on your vegetables themselves.
Tell me what seasonings.
Like you could grill your asparagus, what did you put? Broccoli, asparagus, spinach, whatever you do to that. That's important to season that all the way and then put that on top of your sauce. Did you want cheese? Oh, no, you wanted vegan, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's just not make it vegan.
You can keep it vegan, but, you know, if you can make it with cheese, it's even better. A little layer of cheese, then put more sauce. And then when you're going to be done with that and you put your other layer of lasagna on top, you're going to have a wonderful little, beautiful, gooey little mess on your hand that's going to be delicious.
I guess I would take your basil out and make a pesto out of it. And,
right.
So that you need more intensity in your herbage, it seems like that to me. And if you aren't going to make it vegan, I think a bechamel is for some custardy quality. If your cashew cheese... Or cashew cream wasn't strong enough, you know, red chili flakes, you know, anything to kind of pop the flavor a bit.
And don't be afraid to put a little salt on your lasagna because it probably doesn't have much salt in it. So
yeah.
With those cashew, you need to have a little intensity. So maybe a little olive oil and, and salt brushed onto your dough, so that will accentuate the flavor of the pasta. Basically, what you're trying to do is, when you layer a dish like this, you want to make sure that every layer is seasoned correctly, because by the end, you're going to have bland stuff in the middle and seasoned stuff on the outside, because it's not going to mix together. It's not boiling. It's not in a stew, right?
Right.
So you want to create that stew of layers of flavor. And again, grill your vegetable. If your barbecue is on, grill all your vegetable you have in the fridge and then keep them in the fridge for the next day and then build your lasagna or whatever you're doing. You have flavored vegetable already. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Toss them in a little bit of olive oil and seasoning at the last minute. Put that in your lasagna and you'll have extra flavors of layer of flavor.
And the other thing, since you're without meat, but you so you don't have the kind of earthiness that meat brings,
right.
A layer of mushroom duxelle.
Yeah, mushroom.
Right?
Yeah.
So I don't love just sliced mushrooms in there, but if you take the mushrooms, cook them down till they're intensely mushroom, and chop it, and then you've got a nice layer of mushroom duxelle in there, which will differentiate your layers of the lasagna.
Right.
So it sounds like it was all a lot of the same thing.
I think the mushrooms would have really, really helped quite a bit.
Yeah, and this is a perfect explanation of what Tom just said. Don't just slice mushroom and put them like this on top of your lasagna, because it's going to have no flavor.
All right. I think you made it a boring old lasagna quite extraordinary, Chef. Thank you very much.
No problem. We're here for you.
We have so many things to talk about today. Coming up, as I said earlier, Leslie Kelly is going to join us about all the different food movies at the festival that's happening right now, the Seattle International Film Festival. And I will say, like you and I were at the Wild, if you have a chance to look up the Wild or go to one of the showings that's happening around the Seattle area, I would really suggest you do that as a way to inform yourself about Pebble Mine happening or proposed in the headwaters of Bristol Bay.
If you love salmon and believe it is our main protein around here, and it's our, what do you call that, mascot, in some ways, you should definitely owe it to yourself to go check The Wild.
And if you can't find that, I know The Breach is online, and
correct,
that tells a similar story. Okay, when we come back, Leslie Kelly on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show from the Hot Stove Society. Tom Douglas here, owner of several of Seattle's fine restaurants, including the one we're standing above, Lola, Carlisle Room over by the Paramount Theater. I got a bunch.
A magnificent sight here. Look at all these people.
Yeah, they're happy.
Happy to be here. And I'm Thierry Roturo, the chef in hat, owner of Luc in Madison Valley and Lule downtown Seattle at the corner of 6th and Union, bottom of the Sheraton.
And Leslie Kelly has joined us. You've got a new hair color. I probably shouldn't say it's new, but it's been retouched up lately.
That's right. You know, it's Friday.
Yeah.
Going full pink.
It's Pink Friday.
Hot pink. Hot pink Friday.
So you have returned from your trek across America.
We put on about 25,000 miles. Mm-hmm. We went all the way up the Alaska Highway and all the way over to Florida, up the eastern seaboard. Ate so much incredible food across the country. I'm just, came home fat and happy. I'm happy to be out of the vehicle for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
My husband wrote a really fun story in the LA Times travel section last week that talked about, you know, the realities of living in an RV, which include, I hear some knowing chuckles behind me, like, yeah, things break, fights happen. We're living in a 23-foot space. We've been married for
You really tested your marriage right now.
it was a challenge and also intensely wonderful in so many, you know, experiences that we stuffed a lifetime of memories into 8 months. And we're back home for the summer, going out again in the fall.
Nice.
So,
well, you are here. Leslie used to write for the Seattle PI, for the Memphis paper, the Spokane paper, all recipes. You've been around the foodie block, I will say. And you are here to tell us about some of the best food movies happening at the Seattle International Film Festival.
Well, these days I'm a contributor to Forbes.com, which is fun. I interviewed you earlier this week about Copper River Salmon, and that post is kind of blowing up.
Is
Copper River Salmon worth $60 a pound? I don't know. Maybe you can do a little
show. The answer is if you have the money, yes.
Well, what did I tell you? I thought it was worth it because it puts the spotlight on wild fish.
Yes.
On its environment, on the how the species grows and operates, you know, coming from the river to the sea for a few years, and then back to the river to nurture everything in its path, eagles, bears, trees, bull trout, I mean, all sorts of things. So I do think it's worth it just for the spotlight that it presents.
Right. And also, you know, how the fisheries have improved dramatically over the years. So I love that you mentioned the wild. It's actually not part of the culinary cinema lineup, but there are some really cool movies coming up, and I did write a post about that for Forbes.com. We've got a show about called Chef's Diaries. It's a couple of really famous chefs from Spain who were looking for inspiration and went to Scotland. Not necessarily... Wow. What you think of with culinary destination, but you know, of course they drink a bunch of scotch too, but and I saw a film last week at the Majestic. I love going to the Majestic because you can always get a good seat there. It was called Wine Calling, and a bunch of French maverick winemakers making natural wine. That's no, you know, Thierry knows this is not...
Well, it's different than biodynamic, right?
It's a little smidge of biodynamic, but it's, you know, natural yeast.
Right.
No sulfites at all, or maybe just a teeny
bit. No added sulfites.
Right.
Sulfites occur naturally.
They do occur naturally, correct. But, you know, the film is about... It's a little bit more than an hour. We see a lot of scenes of the Frenchmen drinking wine and eating great food, which is always inspiring. So I went directly after the movie. I went to Ballard Market and said, you know, I got to get some natural wine. And they're like, "That there's no such thing." Okay, well. But I've been a huge fan of this culinary cinema program since they started it up, I think 3 or 4 years ago, seeing just some great films which have, you know, ended up on Netflix or whatever, but seeing movies in, you know, that environment in a theater with fellow film lovers is just such a treat. And we are so fortunate to have the Seattle International Film Festival going on for 3+ weeks. And it's not, you don't have to have a pass to go. But you know, you can walk up and buy a ticket. You will be standing in line, but with other people who are serious film lovers, who come from all over the country and the world. You know, my husband and I went and saw an Icelandic love story called Pity the Lovers, and the director of the film was there to answer questions afterwards. So that it's just such a cool festival, and I love, again, the whole cinematic, you know, food movies.
So any other food movies going on in the next 3 weeks?
One that I'm really excited about, it's called Funk with an E. It's about the chef who kind of fumbled and then opened up Trattoria Felix in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And he's gotten just, you know, incredible notoriety. I think he won a James Beard Award. But he, you know, he had some fails before he hit it big. And now you can't get a table there, of course. And then,
I think that's, you know, in a funny way, we did the same thing.
I know, we all
did struggled, and then all of a sudden things went fine.
Doesn't that make it interesting?
Well, what it does is, I think for us, it gave us better business practices when things did go well.
Right.
Because you learned how to scrape by when things weren't good, right? So.
And, you know, he's famous for his pasta. You know, he went and studied in Italy, and so the post that I wrote, I said, you know, I gave recommendations. Once you go to these films, you're hungry. Like I was, you know, I needed that wine after that movie. and after the Funk movie, I recommended going and having some pleen at Palace Kitchen because it is, for my money, it's the best pasta dish in Seattle, period.
Ooh. Well, it's certainly a bit unique. compared to most pasta dishes in Seattle.
Right.
So I think just the fact that it's been 25 years straight on the menu made by the same person every day.
Martha
Francis does a fabulous job. So
yeah, it is amazing. Mm-hmm. So go and have some of that. Go see the movie and go have some plain at Palace
Kitchen. So on these movies, like you just spoke about Funk, do they play multiple times during the festival or is it one and done?
It plays multiple times. You can go on and create your own schedule. That's what's another thing that's cool. Go online to SIFF.net and, you know, pick the films that you want to see, and it'll create a calendar for you so you can keep track of all the many films. I mean, they're playing every day, all day long, throughout the city. They're even going to start playing up in Shoreline Community College this weekend. I think that's where The Wild is playing a little bit, earlier.
Yeah, the last Wild performance is, I think, before the show airs on Saturday. So,
okay.
Hopefully somebody heard about it and got out there and did it. Leslie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
Always good to see you all.
I'm sure since you're in town, we'll see you a few times this summer. Come on and tell us about your adventures around the country. Up next, Sharon Bodden is here of formerly the Spanish Table, now called Paris Madrid Grocery, down on Western Avenue, I believe. She just received the largest selection of paella pans in the Northwest and is celebrating with the paella demonstration on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's paella time in the Seattle kitchen.
Yay.
At the Hot Stove Society.
Olé.
This is really good timing for this segment because we have a paella class coming up on June 25th here, taught by Chef Bridget Charters. And so the June 25th, I want to say 6 to 8 or something like that. So it's a good time to have this particular guest, Sharon Baden of the formerly Spanish Table, now Paris Madrid Grocery. I like that name. Paris.
Yeah, me too.
I used to have the Spanish Table and the French
the
grocery,
Paris grocery.
Or the Paris Grocery.
Yeah.
And you just combined the two.
Yes, we did.
Good.
Yeah.
She just received the largest selection of paella pans in the Northwest and is celebrating with a paella demonstration. Is that at the store?
Yes.
Okay.
We had one yesterday, and we have another one coming up on June 1st. Saturday.
And when you come by to watch the demonstration, do you get a little taste?
You do. For $5, you get a little taste.
$5.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're sending around a picture right now to our audience that as a pan of paella, it looks like it could serve 100. You said more like 50.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's about the size of your entire body.
Oh, yeah. Easily.
Well, what is the biggest size a paella pan comes in? I've seen like world record attempts at paella.
Yeah,
right.
The biggest one our vendor sells serves 200 people. The biggest one we have in the store serves 85 people.
Huh.
I saw the biggest pan I've ever seen was in the Basque Country, and it was for 200 people. It's a big pan, and they were doing it on wood fire, which was really cool.
Yes.
You know, they were doing it on...
Is it like 10 feet across, or how big is...
No. It's about...
Like 6 feet.
Maybe, six, 7 feet across.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's a big pan.
Yeah.
It's big enough for a dog to stand
in. And you can't be only one person making that paella, because you need a ton of people going around, putting all the different ingredients as you move along.
Cool.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some Spanish ingredients that you need for paella and things that you sell at your store. Again, the Paris Madrid Grocery on Western Avenue.
Right below Pike Place Market. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. The typical traditional paella, Valencian paella, has rabbit, chicken, three kinds of beans, and land snails. Most people, Americans anyway, think of chorizo as a mixed paella, which usually has chorizo in it, seafood, sometimes clams or mussels, shrimp, maybe green beans. So there's some variation in what you can do. I mean, a lot of Spanish people are pretty strict about what they consider a real paella, so maybe you never put chorizo in your paella. It's more of a rice dish then if it has chorizo in it. But personally, I love chorizo, and it adds so much flavor. I always put it in my paella.
So it's okay. We're not in Spain.
It's okay. It's your paella. Do whatever you want. I mean, okay. That's part of the fun because it's so versatile.
Mm-hmm.
You can do a vegetarian paella, say on a meatless Monday. We have these Nora peppers that would be delicious in a vegetarian paella if you roast the vegetables. And then these Nora peppers, you rehydrate by, you crack them in half, steep them in hot water, and then scrape off the meat from the inside. They're very intense flavored. They're earthy. They're not spicy, but they just give a really nice depth of flavor to anything. You can also just put it in your regular paella. You can make romesco sauce out of them. They're an essential ingredient in romesco sauce. I like the bomba rice from Spain. It's a short grain rice. Valencian paella rice is a short grain rice, but there's two different varieties. There's the normal rice that absorbs 2 cups liquid to 1 cup of rice.
That's a lot.
But the bomba rice absorbs about 3 cups liquid to 1 cup of rice. So if you have a really flavorful broth, the rice will have more flavor, and also it expands more, so you don't have to use as much rice per serving. And it's paella is more of a dry rice dish. It isn't soupy or sticky like risotto. And part of the reason is the Spanish rice has a lower starch content, and also you don't want to stir it. Whereas with risotto, you stir it pretty much constantly, which releases the starch, makes it stick together, gives it that texture. But the texture of paella is completely different. The grains typically are separate. They're not clumped together at all. You can also add beans, this is what we like to put. They're called granja beans. They're big white beans. Those are delicious in a paella, especially like a meat paella. They really kind of give more flavor. Especially if you're making a big one, they stretch out the servings.
So and now then, when you buy beans like that, those big, gigantic beans that are in there, they look like they're almost falling apart already.
Yeah.
So do they don't mush out in the paella?
Not really. I mean, no. You want to add them towards the end.
Okay.
You don't really need to cook them any further. Another ingredient, of course, saffron is, I think, essential to paella. I like to put quite a bit of it in. I did a 19-serving paella at the demo yesterday, and I put about a half a gram of saffron in. It was super, super flavorful. It also adds a lot of great color.
Mm-hmm. And it's also Spanish saffron, right?
Yes, yeah. Spanish saffron. And then piquillo peppers are another great ingredient. Piquillo peppers are native to Spain. They're really intensely flavored, but they're not spicy. They have a little tang to them. They use them a lot for stuffing in Spain. They stuff them with crab or fish or cheese, but they're also great just sliced up and put on top of a paella or chopped up and just mixed in.
You know, you often see the roasted peppers on the shelf, and they are so tempting because all the work's done for you. But
exactly.
I would say the piquillo peppers that you see on the shelf that are roasted are the best roasted canned pepper.
Right.
If you know what I mean. You know,
flavor-wise, yes.
Flavor-wise, yeah. Their structure is good. They hold up nice. Their flavor's intense. They don't taste like a canned pepper.
Exactly.
As much as some of the bell pepper pre-roasted in cans taste. That is, they just don't have the same energy that these peppers do.
So. Right.
So
right.
I use those for all sorts of things. I love them.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Can you tell us how you start a paella? Because a lot of people are afraid to do a paella because they go, well, first the rice sticks and everything, so... Let's go through the motions of that.
Yeah. Well, the most important thing is to prep everything ahead of time. Cut up your chicken, your chorizo, prep everything, scrub your clams, and then you put some olive oil in the pan, saute the chicken and the chorizo. Then you do a sofrito with tomato and onion, or you can buy that in a jar as well. We do sell one that's really, really concentrated, has a fabulous flavor because it's made when the tomatoes are ripe. Whereas if you're making a paella in the winter and you buy a tomato here, it's not really going to have that much flavor.
Right.
So you do the sofrito, then you add the rice and stir it a little bit so the rice absorbs a lot of the liquid from the pan. Then you add the broth, and by the way, we like to steep the saffron in hot broth before we add it to the rice because then the flavor disperses all through the paella. Otherwise, if you just throw the strands of saffron in the rice, they just clump together and the flavor never diffuses through the whole thing. Then you just let it simmer for about 10 minutes if you're adding seafood. You put that in towards the end so it doesn't get overcooked. If you're putting beans in, anything like that, put them in at the same time as the seafood. And then at the end, you turn it off, cover it with foil, let it sit for about 10 minutes. And then if you want to get that crust on the bottom, which is a little tricky, it takes some experimentation, you turn the heat back on to about medium and then turn up the heat. And when you hear it popping, then the crust is done.
Good. I'm glad you said crust because that's my favorite part. Okay, we only have a minute left. So you brought us a little bit of Iberico ham?
Yes. This is the brand Cinco Hotas called 5J. It's considered the best brand in Spain, and we now have the whole legs that we're slicing at the store. It's buttery.
Oh,
it's nutty. It just melts in your mouth. It's fantastic.
It's really fun eating this in front of the audience because they can't have any.
I know. Sorry. It's kind of expensive.
And then you brought a chorizo.
Yeah. This is the chorizo. We're passing around samples to the audience. This is the Palacios brand chorizo. It's made in Spain. It's fully cured. You don't even have to cook it before you eat it. I love to use that one in the paella. But we do have a couple of other brands. There's the Doña Juana Chorizo Bilbao, which is a big favorite at our shop, and also D'España Chorizo, which is made in New York. That's a really nice one as well. But those are semi-cured, so you do need to cook those.
Cook them,
yeah. We are serving a chorizo sandwich at the Dahlia Bakery once a week
now.
They're very popular. People love chorizo.
Yes, they do.
That's for sure. Thank you so much, Sharon Baden of the Paris Madrid Grocery down on Western Avenue for our little paella primer. We look forward to joining you on the 1st of June. I'll be in Scotland, but if you want to join her on the 1st of June and have a little taste of homemade paella, please do it.
Yeah.
Up next, Michaela Tartaglia is here with tips on pasta. You're listening to Cairo Radio on 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show from the Hot Stove Society. We are here. The audience is rabid for breakfast. I can't wait. It's a very large audience today. You know, if you want to come join us here at the Hot Stove Society, typically we tape on Tuesday mornings. Today's a Friday morning, but it's $20, and you get a delicious Dahlia Bakery breakfast sandwich.
Free coffee.
Oh, and the coffee's free.
Coffee is free.
We don't put any of the 20 towards the coffee.
That's right.
Yeah. So that's always awesome. And what else do I have to say? That's about it. Okay. You want to eat some pasta, Chef?
Yes. Ciao, Tom.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Except I'm not allowed to use the accent. She said I sound cheesy.
Well,
when
I'm sorry.
When I do my Italian.
I had to do it.
My Italian. Is it an intonation or something like that?
Your Italian is from Seattle.
I have a story, and I can't remember even how to say the words about it, so I won't. Michaela Tartaglia is here.
Perfect.
Without the accent. She has a restaurant in the Pike Place Market called Pasta Casalinga, down there above De Laurentiis, right, in that little courtyard?
It's adjacent.
Adjacent.
Adjacent, like
to the second level of
Exactly. It's on the atrium looking. It's almost a balcony overlooking the Sasquatch.
Right. So if you're looking from the outside, if you're looking at the big clock where Pike Street ends into Pike Place, it's to the left up a flight of stairs.
Exactly. Correct. Yeah.
Yes.
There's a little tiny burrito shop, and there is like a t-shirt shop. And right in the middle, there's a big entrance. That's an atrium entrance. Mm-hmm. And we are located right above there,
okay,
overlooking.
And you just had your 1 year anniversary of being open.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Very exciting.
She's fabulous, by the way. She makes awesome pasta.
What do you know? Have you been there?
Yes.
Yes.
Francois told
I?
Me a lot about you too.
Yeah. Okay.
And are you going to do a class here again?
I am. I'm very excited finally to be back.
Mm-hmm.
I will be here on June 12th, and I will make cicatielli pasta, which is my signature pasta.
Say it slowly.
Cicatielli.
Cicatielli.
Cicatielli is a pasta also called cavatelli, cingoli, can be called in many ways,
mm-hmm.
and is a typical pasta of central side of Italy. Made with flour and water, eggless, like many pasta are. And it's a pasta that I love to teach because it's the dough, besides the dough that we will make by scratch in the class,
mm-hmm.
we will shape the pasta with our hands. So it's a pasta that doesn't require any tools. And it's a pasta that everybody can make. It's a farmer pasta, very mm-hmm. simple, very beautiful, and there's a sexy story behind the execution.
Oh.
But I will tell during the class.
Yeah, you're not going to give that away
no,
now.
No, never.
Do tell
that.
A little bit.
It can't go on the radio. It's just,
no, sorry about
yeah.
that, yeah.
So I think of eggless pasta being from the center of Italy south. Is that true, or is that just a little old wives' tale?
No. Traditionally, pasta can be either pasta or pasta l'uovo, mm-hmm. which means pasta with eggs, which is probably a small percentage of the pasta. So usually Italians...
Oh, really? With egg is small?
Oh, yeah. Imagine that pasta is something that Italians eat daily, like in many cultures they eat rice. So it's for the people. So if you look back at the history of Italy, the eggs were something pretty expensive. The farmers used to sell, and so they could easily make pasta without egg, but the key to make pasta without egg is the flour. So that's why we use semola or farina di grano duro, mm-hmm. in English durum or semolina, because
mm-hmm.
you know that flour so high in protein and gluten allowed the dough to stick together mm-hmm. without eggs.
So when you see like a flour and water wonton wrapper, right, which you can buy at mm-hmm. Wajimaya or lots
yeah.
of places, what you're suggesting is that because that's not maybe the same kind of
flour
mm-hmm.
there's maybe not as much protein in that particular flour. That's why that one is looks different and feels
yeah.
different.
Yeah, it's
soft.
It's soft.
Why it doesn't yeah. expand so much,
right.
the wonton wrapper.
Yeah, and you know, in the universe of flour can go from soft and then hard, right? And we like it hard, usually,
mm-hmm.
for pasta in the flour.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also how the pasta stays al dente and is easily digestible and is great for you. You can eat daily right. without eggs. And then, of course, egg pasta is wonderful, but it's something else.
Mm-hmm.
So all the pasta we make at Pasta Casalinga is eggless pasta flour, and we proudly use shepherd grain, which is a local
mm-hmm. very good
and you know just great.
Those guys are doing good work. Have you been up to the bread lab up there?
No, but I'm planning a trip this summer.
Yeah,
okay, I'll go with
really
you because
nice
I've been there.
Let's
too. It's
go, yeah,
beautiful.
Let's get a field trip. Yeah,
absolutely.
Why not?
Yeah.
We've missed the tulips though. So what else do you do with that pasta? Now we've made it in the class. So what are you going to
do?
We
will make it. So it's going to be a Puglia region.
Mm-hmm.
Let's pretend, let's imagine we're south of Italy.
You're in the boot.
Yeah, in a beautiful, beautiful region with beautiful people by the seaside. Italian cuisine is very centered on local. So seaside, seafood, mountain, meat. I mean, that's...
Let's imagine that, Terry.
Yeah, I am imagining it, all right.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Okay, so one...
Your eyes are rolling back in your head right now.
Sorry, that's...
I'm sitting on the harbor going, yeah, sure, what fish is that? I don't know.
So we're having cicatielli, they will make from scratch with It will still be good. It's June, so Manila clams and cannellini beans, which is a typical combination of Puglia or Sicily in general. Like either you have some shellfish with garbanzo beans or beans, and we will make that with capers, shallots, Italian parsley, little garlic, olive oil, no dairy ever.
No tomato.
You mean you're one of those no cheese on seafood?
No cheese on seafood, I'm sorry.
Oh, my God.
No,
I am with you.
If anybody of the guests will ask, we will say.
I will get them cheese.
Well, we'll do. We will talk about it.
You know, we have a cheesemonger coming up.
Tom.
Who's very upset right
Tom,
now.
Tom.
I'm sorry.
You have somebody from Italy teaching you how to make the dish the way they eat it in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
When you're home, you can do whatever you want, but
I know,
right
but
now...
My wife says this all the time, because she's part Italian, and she never lets me put cheese
she knows better,
on
see?
The clam pasta, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What's
so you know
with you people?
It's gross.
You guys make the king of cheese, Reggiano Parmesan. It's perfect on
I know,
Parmesan.
But it doesn't go everywhere.
Okay, whatever.
It's like ketchup. You don't put it on everything. I hope not.
So I'm looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to watch you beat up somebody who puts cheese on the pasta.
And she will.
I know, she's got a mean right.
She will.
Because she's made a lot of pasta with those arms.
No violence. It's going to be so much fun.
It's going to be
forward.
Only love at this class.
Always. Okay. Just love. Yeah.
All right. I believe you. The class, again, is here at the Hot Stove. It is... June 12th from 6 to 8 p.m. Tickets are $90. Go to thehotstovesociety.com and includes a big bowl of pasta.
Yeah, and we'll have a demo. We make a cozze ripiene, very nice mussel stuffed with anchovies and parsley and bread, and it's going to be very nice.
Sounds delicious.
And if you can't make it to the class, go visit Pasta Castalinga. Oh, Casalinga, pardon.
Yes, which is at 93 Pike Street, number 201. Thank you, Michaela.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up next, we're going to do a Memorial Day party using asparagus in every course with help from Chef Joel Panlilio, executive chef at Tilt Restaurant up there on 45th in Wallingford on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. You good with that? And we're back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show from the Hot Stove Society. It's Memorial Day weekend. We're very excited about that, as I'm going to play around the golf this weekend.
Sure you are.
Although first, you know, we are smack dab in the middle of asparagus season. I had an asparagus scramble for breakfast this morning at Lola. It was delicious. We've invited Joel Panlilio from Tilth Restaurant to help us do our dinner party this week. Apparently, Tina is hosting. I didn't even know your house was big enough for this.
You know, I've expanded a little. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put the dogs and the cat in a different room so you guys aren't bothered.
Good.
And, I'm excited to have you over. Everyone will need to wear a special hat.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And I'm super hungry
taking
for asparagus.
Taking care of, check.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's do this because we don't have a lot of time. Who wants to jump in on the cocktail? Want me to or you want to?
I'll make a cocktail, Tom.
All right.
Because it's Memorial Day, so we're going to do a nice...
Who's our guest? I forgot about our guest.
Oh, shoot.
The Jolly Green Giant, of course.
Absolutely.
Okay. The Jolly Green Giant. Okay,
you
so
know,
I'm
Connie Crawford grows the most beautiful asparagus in Prosser, so let's invite Connie Crawford.
All right. Yeah I can't fit the giant in my house.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect.
But I did find a can of Green Giant in your cupboard, Tina. Anyway, pickled asparagus with, of course, a Bloody Mary would be a great way to start and celebrate those beautiful asparagus. So pickling 3-2-1 can of basic pickling juice, which is 3 water, 2 sugar, 1 vinegar. Mix the whole thing together, bring it to a boil. Put some spice in there, and put some nice spice in there. Lots of peppercorn, because you want to give it a little bite. Maybe a little bit of one chile in there.
Coriander seed, maybe?
Coriander seed. And, that's enough. I don't want to go too crazy.
Joel, is he okay on that pickled asparagus?
Sounds great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Wouldn't do anything different? What kind of vinegar would you use?
I usually go cider for something for something like that, yeah.
Cider vinegar would be delicious, actually. It would be good for that.
All right, salad course. It's up to you, Joel.
Who doesn't love, like, Caesar? So something along those lines is what I'm thinking. You can grill if we're doing the dinner outside. We can grill the asparagus. If not, just roast it in the oven. Maybe a little frisée or some heartier green, and then basically a vinaigrette, an anchovy vinaigrette. Not a lot of people, I think, realize that what makes Caesar dressing so delicious is the anchovy in there. You know, like you get a different kind of salinity as you would just like simple salt.
You know it when they don't have any in it and they call it a Caesar.
Yes, you can definitely tell. You're like, there's something missing here.
I will say, personally for me, though, when you only taste anchovy, you've put too much in it.
Right,
oh, yeah,
right,
for sure.
It's supposed to be kind of that umami layer.
Exactly.
Flavor, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And that's what kind of cheese do you like in your Caesar?
Parmigiano,
Reggiano, yeah, Parmigiano Reggiano,
or some pecorino would be nice too. And then if you have like some leftover stale bread, then it's like a great way to use it up.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I love warm butter and olive oil roasted croutons personally.
Yep.
Soaked all the way through.
They need to be soaked.
Yeah, yeah.
It's and nice when you eat a dry crouton that's got beautiful juice in it, especially butter.
It's different when you cook it in a pan with like that hot oil and like the butter and great trick I found out before was like once you take it out of the oil and it's still nice and warm, grate some cheese on it and then it like wraps it up all on there and just gives it like way more flavor.
Yeah, yep. And serving them a little bit warm is nice.
Yeah.
Okay, for dinner, since we've had such a big salad, I'm going to go soup. We're going to make an asparagus and potato soup. The thing about my soups is that I go super light. So I cut my potatoes small so that they cook quickly. And I'm going to just kind of boil them quickly in some half and half or cream. Your half and half will break, but your potatoes will bring it back together. It won't look as pretty, but if you don't want the richness of cream, that's what I would suggest. And so we're just going to boil the potatoes till they're done. And then you can leave skins on, little reds or little Yukon Gold potatoes. And then I'm going to put my chopped asparagus in there. For
2 minutes.
2 minutes, right? Do not overcook your asparagus. Then you go into a KitchenAid blender and puree it up. And that's really, so you've honestly only cooked your soup for 3 minutes max. Soon as you're done pureeing, stir in fresh tarragon, maybe some fresh mint, any sort of fresh herbs
yep.
that you want, but you don't want to cook those, right? You're going to stir them in at the end. Finish with a little creme fraiche.
So serve warm.
Swirl of lemon-pressed olive oil.
Mm.
That would be my suggestion there. And then great fresh black pepper over top. You love asparagus soup?
I do. The problem in a restaurant setting, I guess, is sometimes like keep holding it warm. So
Yeah. Yeah, because it keeps
cooking,
right?
Yeah. It turns, yeah.
And it keeps cooking, and it gets actually nasty.
Yeah, it gets gray. So you want to heat it to order every time if you're going to chill it off.
Right.
Heat it to order every time. Okay, chef, I think that leaves you on dessert.
Oh, great.
2 minutes left.
That sounds lovely, having asparagus for dessert. Anybody? I'm going to make an asparagus jam. Just kidding.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to do asparagus, grilled asparagus with goat cheese.
We already had grilled asparagus. Think of another one, chef.
Really?
Yeah, that's what he did for his
Caesar. I was using the barbecue because he was gone and the heat was still there, so I used the end of the barbecue and grilled some more asparagus.
How about asparagus powder, like a freeze-dried asparagus powder?
Yeah, who's going to make that
on
at home?
Chef.
I would dehydrate the asparagus.
With fresh figs.
Yeah, and goat cheese. Mm. Back to my goat cheese. Because I want to eat my goat cheese with my asparagus because I love that combination. Toasted walnut, really, really dark toasted walnut, and a bit of honey. And then you have a wonderful little cheese plate.
I had yesterday from the Dahlia Bakery a little cocoa nib shortbread that had orange peel in it. Mm. My, oh my.
Yeah, that sounds good.
That was really good. That'd be a good combination with that.
Yeah, cocoa nib would work because the bitterness.
It's a little bitter, yeah.
Yeah, with the asparagus, that would work. But the idea is to do a dip using the asparagus, you know, and dip them into the goat cheese with a little bit of honey and toasted walnut or pecan, and then nice grilled bread.
Mm, delicious. Toast. Joel, would you eat that?
Absolutely. I'm salivating right now.
Joel Pendolino has been our guest chef expert on the dinner party at Tina's house with, who was our guest again?
Connie.
Oh, Connie Crawford. That's right. Who we get all of our field cut asparagus.
And the giant.
And the giant.
And her husband, Charlie.
Yeah.
And Connie, maybe.
And Connie's been asking the giant for a contract.
If you want to go see Joel and his amazing food, go up to Tilf up on 45th in Wallingford. It's been a long time since I've been there. It's time for me to get back.
The only certified organic restaurant in Seattle, I believe.
That is correct.
That is correct.
Lovely. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Happy Memorial Day.
Happy Memorial Day, everyone.
Up next, we have veggie questions from our listeners on all things vegetables. It's a big veggie day today on the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's time for Vegetables in Seattle. Tina, you have some work to do.
I do. I most certainly do. You know, our Facebook page is full of conversation all the time. Mm-hmm. If you want to join it, head to at Seattle Kitchen on Facebook. Today, we have all kinds of questions about veggies, cooking veggies, preparing them, from some of our biggest fans. Chris Polk is asking, first off, he's looking for tricks to get veggie burgers to bind together. He says, I usually use a combo of mushrooms, grains, brown rice, nuts, and veggies, but the burgers taste great but fall apart easily. How do you get them to stick together?
First thing that comes to mind is egg white. Eggs, if you can have eggs, you know, unless you're trying to make it vegan, and then you got to go into seaweed, you know, what am I trying to say?
Agar-agar?
Agar-agar, you know, that would be the other one. But when you cook with agar-agar, it melts down, so you won't be able to hold it together very long.
Yeah, I don't have a clue. We've used bean paste sometimes.
Well, flour, eggs, you know, all those different things, starches will help.
I forgot to mention that Joel Panlilio from our last segment is staying with us for this. You have any thoughts on this? He's the chef at Tilth Restaurant.
Along like Thierry's lines too, like eggs and a little bit of like a binder, like flour. But I know a lot of people are like gluten-free these days and practicing vegan cuisine. So we get a lot of those guests actually at a restaurant too. Bean paste for sure. Something along
rice,
like garbanzos.
Rice flour too.
Garbanzos or rice flour. I think the issue with rice flour is it's very hydrophilic, so it sucks up like all the moisture sometimes.
That's the problem.
Yeah, so it makes it a little bit more, not as juicy as you would want.
Hockey puck.
Yeah, so something like a white bean paste or like a garbanzo beans would be like really good too.
Or look up online and see what the Impossible Burger is using. They're using some sort of
meat binder.
Gum paste, I think, or something like that too. Yeah.
Which
is
a natural.
Well, it's a natural ingredient that's used. It's made from agar, I think gum is. Don't know.
All right. Since you don't know, let's move on. Kara Luca says that she cannot seem to make a good Korean style vegetable pancake. Can you help? Do you have a vegetable pancake at Tanaka-san?
What is different? I mean, I would think that she's looking for like what, chopped green onion and. What would make it Korean different?
The Korean-style one that I've had in the past are the big seafood pancakes when you start, or the Vietnamese ones are more the coconut milk pancake.
Right.
And they're done with coconut milk and rice flour, and I'm not sure about egg or not. Do you know?
I don't think so.
I don't think there's egg. There's egg in the
So it's more one. Coconut milk and rice flour, and you just put that into a pan. You have to use a pan that you're not super concerned about, right, because you do want to let it cook and get hot and seasoned, and then you put in your ingredients right on top of that mix, especially the seafood pancake from the Korean ones.
Chopped shrimp. They put all kinds of different things,
And then serve it with green leaf and herbs on the side so you can make a little wrap. That's what I've had in the past, so that's what I would try.
Great. All right, Lori Dragseth says, how do you keep a rich? How do you create a rich-tasting vegetable broth? She's concerned.
Caramelize your vegetables.
Caramelize vegetables.
Caramelize your onion. Saute your vegetable. Give them an extra layer of flavor. Grill them if you have them. Use grilled vegetable leftovers. You know, give another.
Add chicken bones.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
A vegetarian chicken, that is.
goes back to my favorite thing on this Big Fat Greek Wedding. Remember that?
Yeah.
She says, I'm a vegetarian. She says, oh, you'll have the lamb then. Okay, I'm sorry.
It's okay. Caramelizing the onions and adding spices that are sauteed in oil, all these different process will increase flavor because you're creating new layers of flavor. And don't be afraid to use spices when you're making a little stock. Put the spices towards the end if you're using dry spices.
Herb stems?
No, for example, I was thinking like curry or whatever you have in your cupboard. If you have spices, don't use too much, but use those towards the end of your cooking. So a vegetable stock doesn't take more than 25 to 30 minutes to cook. Otherwise, after that, your vegetables are completely destroyed and it becomes worse. So you want to sweat your vegetables really good. Give them caramelization. Use the sugar that's in those vegetables and get that going. And then put the water on top of that. Put some bay leaf, maybe some leftover stem of parsley you have in your freezer because you kept those. All that stuff, put that in your stock. Bring it to a boil. And then after 20 minutes, just drop a little spice in there so you'll have a more flavored stock.
Great. All right. Tina, great name. Hong Sandmill says, I would love to know how to incorporate fennel into dishes. I think that's a great question.
Fennel into dishes. We do it like several ways. You can do it cooked or uncooked. I suggest if you're going the raw route is to slice it like really thin. Those that have a mandolin, that would be awesome. And if you don't have one, I suggest actually like getting one. They're like $20-$30.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Don't have one, get one.
If you don't have one, you should.
It opens up like a lot of possibilities like for you, like being able to like eat like raw vegetables that you normally wouldn't do. Roasting fennel like gives it a way different flavor too, like a lot richer.
And when you do roast it, then what are you using it with? What are you using it for after you roast it?
We can mix it with like other dishes, or you can like eat it by itself. Really, what we've done in the past is have like roasted fennel and with some potatoes. We've served it with our octopus with like saffron aioli. Would be like awesome. So.
You can also confit it, which is basically cooking it slowly in olive oil for a couple of hours in the oven, about 250 degrees, with a couple toasted fennel seeds into the broth, a couple of bay leaves. Cook that very slowly, and then once you take it out, you have all these beautiful bulbs of fennel that are very soft and ready to go. You take them out of the oil one by one, cut them in half, put some goat cheese on it, warm it up, keep it cold, whatever. But it's got already a huge amount of flavor by being cooked slowly in olive oil.
And the fennel seeds makes it taste even more like fennel. Like,
exactly.
Yeah. And then dust it with fennel pollen.
Yeah. And then flambé
and then
with
have fennel.
And then flambé with pastis and you'll have nothing but anise.
All right. Pamela Benson Lesneski says, is okra ever palatable?
Not here.
No.
Nope.
Terry?
No.
Nope.
No.
Fried.
Fried.
Okay. Yeah, fried. Exactly.
Everything. Okay, tell us how to do that then.
I would just simply salt it, and so it like sweats out a little bit, and then that ends up like being your binder, and then toss it in some like corn flour, like deep fry it. It'd be delicious.
Yeah. I mean, besides deep fry, I'm with you 100%. Yeah. I think besides deep fried, I think I'm not a big fan of okra. Like, you know, a lot of time people just put them in a stew and
overcook
you get this gooey
it.
Thing coming out of there. I'm like, damn. You got to put more love into it. I'm sure it can be delicious if I would put my heart to it. But, I mean, obviously deep frying is a cheating line, I think.
It is. I think okra gets a bad rep, basically, because, like, people
don't know
the
how
way
to
they
it.
Do, like, a lot of vegetables. They overcook it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Becomes, like, slimy and gooey. Right.
I think it gets a bad rap because it's slimy and gooey. Even before you cook it.
I think he's right. I think it's because, you know, people just don't love them and they don't pay attention to it. It used to be the same thing with turnips and all kinds of vegetable that would be, like, that root vegetable. And people would be like, I don't want to eat turnips. It's disgusting.
I will say, from a garden perspective, we put in okra a couple years ago. It is so prolific in the garden. It grows. How does your okra grow? A lot. Yeah, it's amazing about how much yield you get off an okra plant.
Right.
Joel Panlilio from Till, thank you for helping us in our vegetable
thank you,
questions.
Joel.
Thank you, Chef.
Appreciate that. We might even have one more job for you if you're up for it.
I asked Leslie What's Kelly for that.
Oh, you already did. Sorry. Okay. Never mind. You're out, Joel.
All good.
Sorry.
Go check out Tilt on 45th in Wallingford. Up next, Lindsay Slavin is here from the Twin Sisters Creamery up in Ferndale. We're going to talk cheese and beer on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. Yay! We're here at the Hot Stove Society. Everyone just got their breakfast sandwich, so they're quiet. They refuse to
clap
for the show anymore. we're going to jump right into our chat with Lindsay Slavin of Twin Sisters Creamery. She's here to tell us about her cheeses, no doubt, but also you have an intriguing match that you've put in front of us here in the Hot Stove. So welcome to the show, Lindsay.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. So we're a new creamery up in Ferndale, and Yeah, just about an hour and a half north, close to the Canadian border. And we opened in 2015. We're called Twin Sisters Creamery after our twin daughters, Maddie and Lexi. And we're a husband and wife cheesemaking team. So during the week, you'll see me in my hairnet and rubber boots making the three cheeses that we make at the facility. Mm-hmm. But we also have a beautiful facility with a retail cheese shop and wine, a specialty wine shop. And we do all kinds of events, private events, wine and cheese pairing, beer and cheese pairings. And we like to experience all cheeses with our guests, not just what we make. And when you visit us, we have the big viewing windows in, so you can see the production mm-hmm. of the cheese being made when you come to visit.
So first question, is it cow or is it goat?
This is cow's milk. It's Jersey okay. cow's milk. We are actually a raw milk cheese producer, so okay. we age for 60 days. And we're an artisan cheese producer, which means we don't own the animals or have the farm. So we okay. pick our milk up from Twin Brook Dairy, which is about 12 miles sure. from the creamery.
I got plenty of jars in my basement of that creamery.
Yeah, beautiful, rich.
Give them back.
You know you're supposed to give them back, right?
So... how did you get going on this whole beer and cheese match? You know, everyone always has wine and cheese parties. And you don't ever get invited to a beer and cheese party.
You know, it's...
unless you're having beer cheese.
Yeah. It's actually really become quite popular. It's popular in England and Wisconsin. And there's even Steve Jones of the Cheese Bar down in Portland has put on the Portland Beer and Cheese Festival. And what's happening in Whatcom County, there's up to 15 breweries now in the county. So in our specialty wine and beer shop, we like to feature a lot of the local breweries. So one of our most popular tastings is beer and cheese. And I brought three of those breweries here today for us to try. We only make three cheeses at the creamery. We have our Whatcom Blue is what we're most known for. And then we have a farmhouse cheese, which we call it our farmhouse because it's not a cheddar. We don't do a cheddaring process. It's very unique to the facility, and that's why it's called farmhouse cheese.
It's, but it's soft, like a... almost like a jack or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's got a bit of a tang up front, like a cheddar, but the melting properties are incredible on all three cheeses.
This would be good melting.
Yeah, excellent in casseroles and grilled cheese and things like that. And then we have our whole black peppercorn, and that's the same base, but we boil whole black peppercorns first and put it in the cheese. And it's my favorite. I love pepper. Last year, we actually won a second place award in its category at the American Cheese Society. So we're really proud with that little
bit. Oh, I love how it comes at the end.
The pepper at the end? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you don't test it at the beginning. You're kind of like, where is the pepper? And then at the end, it's like you get the beautiful finishing of black peppercorn. It's really
and
nice.
The heavy cream can kind of balance that whole black pepper. You can get a bite, but the cream really does balance it.
Right.
So what we do at our tastings is basically you want to try each item individually and form your opinion of it. It's the same with trying each of the beers individually, so I'll walk you through those beers. And then when we do the pairing, we'll eat the cheese first. You'll enjoy it, swallow the cheese, and then have a nice sip of the beverage, and you'll see how it changes and how well they work together. So the first one we have on the left, this is from Atwood Ales, another husband and wife team. They just opened in 2016. We opened in 2015.
Oh, wow.
They are Belgium influenced on their beers, like
very
lambics
much.
And natural fermentation.
It's almost like a raw cider idea.
Yeah, and this one's called their Rouge. It's gorgeous. This is a two-year barrel, single barrel age. Basically a red ale.
So this is not common. I mean, if I'm not a big beer drinker, but this is definitely doesn't remind me of beer as we know beer around here.
No.
This is definitely
very unique. They're
very
doing
unique,
some
yeah.
fabulous
very special.
Things. And so it's kind of got that nice like sour cherry tang at the end. So you just try that on its own. It's beautiful. And then you can enjoy the cheese and follow with the beverage.
Wow. That's very interesting.
And then the second one we have, too, this is Aslan Brewery, one of our other favorite breweries. This is called their Francis Farmer. It's a Saison. There's a huge range of Saisons mm-hmm. with different complexities and lightness to them. This one has a really nice high carbonation and kind of a... like citrus finish, a navel orange citrus finish to it. It's just beautiful with the peppercorn.
I you know what I like so far? We haven't been, like... hoppy beer, kind of like what we always get around here, the strong IPA.
Yes.
So is that a key here, the fruitiness of the beer? Is that why it goes better with the cheese, do you think? Or
we do all of these. We personally sit down and do the pairings ourselves. There are some general rules, and there's articles out there and people that are telling you how to properly pair IPAs with blue and porters with cheddar, things like that. But because these beers are also unique to the region, we actually just sit down and see which ones work.
Right.
You know, so it's personal opinion in this case. And the final one is from Wander Brewing. This is another husband and wife team that opened in 2004, a beautiful brewery in Bellingham. And this is their, it's basically a Belgium double. So this one's going to boast like really rich caramel, dark beer, really nice finish on that.
And you do test the a little bitter on there at the end.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
really is nice with the blue.
Yeah, so then you try them together, and that's where the combination, they really kind of soften
it's
or
settle
in.
It's very interesting. I would have never, I mean, I'm like Tom, I always do wine and cheese, you know, if I'm, because usually I'm drinking wine and I just go, let's have some cheese. But the other, with beer, it's a very interesting process.
Yeah.
Well, that last one is my favorite pairing of the group, personally. I don't know why, but...
That's fantastic. Our blue is what we're known for. That's mm-hmm. the one that's out there. Mm-hmm. Everyone loves to work with that and cook with that cheese and pair with that cheese.
I like the first one because it's very, so different.
Yeah.
I mean, that red beer is incredibly different.
Yes,
the you
rouge,
don't taste beer
yeah.
like this around here. So it's very... I like the fact that it's so different. And it definitely... You can see there's craftsmanship in there for... You know, and longevity in there. So,
yeah, Whatcom County is a fun place to visit for foodies. You have, like I said, 15 breweries. There's also great agriculture up there with the strawberries and the raspberries.
Right.
There are four cheesemakers in Ferndale in a 5-mile radius of each other. And it's very collaborative. We all work together. It's a nice day trip to come and visit. And then in Skagit Valley, of course, you mentioned Bread Farm
sure.
and stuff like that. There's four cheesemakers, soon to be five, in like a 1-mile radius of each other in Skagit Valley. So agri-tourism and visits, it's a great place to come and visit.
Right.
I'm just going to read off this label a little bit on the sour ale aged in oak barrels from the Atwood Ales Farm Brewery. And this is why it's interesting to go along, in my mind, to go along with your cheese, because you obviously are taking milk from the land, right, and blah, 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 and all the terroir and all the things.
With raw milks, especially.
With raw milks, yeah. Exactly. So and then this one. Which you don't think of in beer. What's typically a beer? Is a 5-day process, 3-day process, something like that?
Yeah, maybe even more. I mean, it could
maybe
be
even
a
less.
Week
yeah.
or two. Depends
this
on
this is
what
an exercise
doing.
In patience. This beer is the culmination of more than 2 years of nature and nurture. We racked the red ale into a neutral American oak barrel in August of 16. Let a plethora of wild yeast and bacteria eat, drink, and be merry. In April of 19... packed less than 25 cases of this special beer. I mean, there's a lot of, between all the effort you put into your cheese and then all the effort going into this sour ale, it's there's a lot going on.
Yeah, it's something to take seriously and to really enjoy. It's very cool.
And that's what's special about our cheese shop and our wine and beer selection. We really are trying to connect with people making it and what makes it unique and have those different things in our actual facility.
So if I go to Ferndale to do a beer tasting and a cheese tasting, where do I stay? Because I'm not going to be...
I know, exactly.
I go to Vancouver?
We're going to have to get a bus to a tour planned. Actually, Steve Jones and I were talking about trying to coordinate or create a beer and cheese festival in Bellingham because of all the activity going on up there. So when I have enough time and energy, I'll work on that.
There we go.
You know, years ago in 1980, I used to sell wine for a distributor here in town, and Bellingham area, Ferndale area, was on my route. I was taking a break from cooking for a little bit, and I remember driving up there, or even when you drove to Vancouver, there was a meat packing plant on the right-hand side of the freeway there. And you could see the live cows going up the escalator and the skins coming out the other side of the plant into a truck.
Well,
I always remember about Ferndale.
It's a freeze-dried facility now.
It's a freeze-dried facility now?
Yeah, and that's our exit. When you take that exit, just remember that, less than a quarter mile on the right-hand side is our beautiful new creamery.
Pass
right
the
off
cow,
the exit.
Make a right.
Yeah, there's no cows
no
anymore.
No cows but, anymore, yeah, exactly. So, but that's how I remembered Ferndale. Yeah. Wasn't there a local, like, cable TV show out of Ferndale, too, that was popular for a while? Ferndale, Washington. Anyway. Just what I was thinking. What's this little jam you have here? Did you mention
that? That's a sour cherry. If you do the whole combination, you can try the cheese by itself. But the sour cherry on the peppercorn specifically and the sour cherry on the blue is just an incredible combination. And it goes really, really nice with the rouge as well. So we make like a grilled cheese sandwich with just sour cherry spread and grated peppercorn. And we always pair it with the blue. So a lot of people like to cook with blue. So we like to show them ways to snack within a nice pairings with the blue cheese. Right.
This is a delicious blue.
Thank you.
Very nice. So that has been Lindsay Slavin of the Twin Sisters Creamery up in Ferndale. Please go visit her and all her friends who live in the neighborhood. Lindsay's neighborhood on any sort of picnic day, like a Saturday, you have a place for people to come.
People can come in and sit in the facility or take things to go, and there's just lots of parks and stuff.
My mouth is so full of flavors I can't even speak anymore. When we come back, it's time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM.
Sorry.
It's time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
We'd like to welcome back Leslie Kelly from The Road.
On the road
former
again.
Reviewer for the Memphis papers, the Spokane papers, the Seattle papers, and now a Forbes contributor. And what else do you do? And a world traveler.
I eat a lot.
You eat a lot.
I think we can just safely call her a food influencer.
There you go.
Okay,
I like that.
Sure. A foodie influencer.
All right, Tina, you're going to run our tasty trivia show today.
I am. You guys, here's how this game is played. You will each get 5 questions. Whoever gets the most correct is the winner. Whoever gets the least correct is obviously the loser. And that loser has to give something away to a member of our audience. Today you'll be playing for Iris from Sammamish because I messed up her breakfast sandwich. So we're going to go ahead and make that up to her.
Wow. Good job.
All right. So, Thierry Rotiro, should you lose on the rare occasion, what will you give to Iris?
Iris, have you been to Luke?
No.
Right. Brunch for two at Luke on a Saturday or a Sunday.
Nice.
There you go.
Leslie Kelly, we forgot to tell you. You got to give something away.
I'm going to go back to my good friends at Bavarian Meats and give you all a pound of whiskey bacon. You know,
but
you can't lose with bacon unless she ordered the veggie sandwich.
Nope.
Okay, cool.
You're safe.
All right.
Chef Tom Douglas, I doubt you'll lose today, but if you do.
I will give Iris a breakfast, lunch, or dinner, your choice for two, down at Seatown Market Diner down there in the basement. The bottom of Virginia Street. It feels like the basement because you go down that huge steep hill to the bottom of Virginia Street.
But it's so great this time of year. You can sit outside. And people watch. I love that spot
and
in
we're
the summertime.
Open breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So that's a $100 gift card.
You want?
Wow. So if you go for breakfast, you can take 3 of your favorite friends. If you go for dinner, maybe just 2 of your favorite friends.
Wow.
All right. Who would like to go first?
I'll start.
All right, Chef Thierry, your first question. Why is it nearly impossible for a home cook to duplicate Chinese restaurant cooking? You have some options.
No, not enough heat.
Do you want the options, or do you want me to just
I'm
going to
go with that. That's the first thing I would think.
You are correct.
Wow.
You don't even need the multiple choice.
Wow.
Someone's coming out on top today.
Just not enough heat, because I can picture that wok at home being like...
Well, the difference is, just an FYI, a wok burner in a Chinese restaurant is closer to 100,000 BTUs, and your home burner is closer to 12,000 BTUs.
Right.
All right, Chef, your question number 2. Eyeing the wine is inspecting it for color. A purplish tint usually means what? Is it well-aged wine, young wine, it's made from purple grapes, or it's fruity?
I like it. The fact it's made from purple grapes. I'm going to go with young and fruity. That's a Beaujolais style of color. Purple is the Rhone Valley color.
Wow, that is correct. The answer is young wine. Very good. All right, 2 for 2. Chef Thierry, prior to frying, food should be what? Seasoned, scored, pounded, or patted dry?
Patted dry.
Correct. Wow. 3. I think our questions are too easy on this one.
You got 5 for 5 last week, right?
Wow. Don't jinx it.
Don't jinx it.
Chef, question number 4. Very often, leftovers that are reheated need additional seasoning. However, you should never add more what?
salt.
Yeah. Wow. Again, didn't even give you the options.
Was there?
That was it. That's 4 for 4 for a perfect score, Chef Thierry. If you add wine to the cooking liquid in a recipe, you should what? Extend the cooking time a bit, shorten the cooking time a bit, leave cooking time the same, or taste and test to determine cooking time.
Extend the cooking time.
Bam. 5 for 5.
Come on.
Leslie Kelly, you're next. The number to beat is 5.
It's a tough act to follow.
Ooh. Yeah. You're nervous.
It's easy, Leslie. It's
very... Oh, well. We'll see about
Your
that.
Your first question. Which food product was chosen for a White House Millennium Time Capsule as an object of enduring American symbolism? You have some choices. Oreo, Hershey bar, Twinkie, or a can of Spam?
I'm going to say Spam.
No. Twinkie.
Twinkie?
Yeah.
Ugh. We'll never die.
They last so long, probably, you know. All right, Leslie. Why is question number 2, right? Why is there a string on the box of Barnum's Animal Crackers? Is it because they need it as a handle? It's a hanger for use on Christmas tree ornaments? Is it for swinging in a game invented by the company, or it was the original closer device?
I'm going to say it was a handle.
It's actually a Christmas ornament.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Oh, no. Wow.
Question number 3 for you. Where did the pimento pepper that makes paprika originate? America, Hungary, China, or Australia?
Hungary.
America.
What is it? What's America the correct?
Is the
America?
Answer. Yeah.
Okay.
Question number 4.
All right.
Hang in there. Which word or phrase was once forbidden to appear on signage at Coney Island? Hot dog, red hot, Frankfurter, or Coney Island?
I'm going to say Coney Island.
Hot dog. Hot dog.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well.
What was it, a Coney dog then or something?
Weird. All right, Leslie.
Okay.
Your last question.
Yes.
A wine's legs are what?
A,
length of the finish? Streaks appearing in the glass
yes.
when wine is swirled.
Streaks in the glass.
There you go.
Oh, woo! My God. Wow.
That's fun.
She's on the board. On the board.
On the board. Tom, you'll need to get 2 correct today to beat Leslie Kelly. Scientists believe that man's first use of corn was for what? Grinding into porridge? Eating raw right from the cob? Roasting on the cob? Or popcorn?
I'll say porridge.
Popcorn. Okay. Tom, in China, what animal was called household deer and considered a special treat in winter? Dormouse, rat, guinea pig, or dog?
Rat.
Yeah, that's it, rat.
Wow.
Your next question. In 1975, this person was sued for libel by Hublian Incorporated for publicly referring to Kentucky Fried Chicken gravy as sludge and saying that it had wallpaper taste. Who said this? Was it Johnny Carson, Julia Child, Colonel Harlan Sanders, or James Beard?
I will say James Beard.
Yeah.
It was Colonel Harlan Sanders. All right. You still need to get one more correct.
I'm trying hard.
It's not easy. It's not easy today. Question number 4, Chef Tom Douglas. In 18th century North America, upper class Americans like George Washington would eat dinner at 2 or 3 and supper at what time?
I'll say 8.
Yeah. You're correct.
All right. Woo!
She's a loser.
Yeah, whatever.
Do you want your last question just
yes,
for fun?
Absolutely.
All right, your last question. The Hungarian monks who first processed pepper into paprika in 1748 used it as what? Flavoring for tea? Treatment for rheumatic disorders? A goulash ingredient or insect repellent?
I'll say goulash.
Yeah, me too.
Nope.
Oh, insect repellent.
Nope.
Flavor their beer.
Nope.
Oh, I guess.
That's what they put it on their head to create those little circles on their no
Actually,
hair.
Actually, not an option. Nope.
Okay.
Treatment for rheumatic disorders.
Yeah, of course.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right, there you go. Yeah. Huh. All right. Okay. Our winner today is Chef Thierry Rotereau. Our other winner today is Iris, who will be receiving a bunch of bacon from Bavarian Meats.
And I'm going to throw in my $100 gift card to see
her. Oh, wow.
When she's down at Bavarian Meats in the market, wow. She can just stop by and have lunch or breakfast.
Fabulous winner.
Nice. If you want to be part of the show like Iris, you can send us a note on Facebook or come right here into the Seattle Kitchen audience at the Hot Stove Society. Go to hotstovesociety.com. Yep. You're listening to Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by the fabulous Tina at Large Media. That's LARJ Media. Our sound engineer is Sean. Don't call me Del Torre. If you'd like to be part of our studio audience, go to hotstovesociety.com and buy tickets for only $20. And remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can subscribe to our podcast through Stitcher, Apple Podcast, or download the Cairo Radio app and search for Seattle Kitchen.
Thanks for listening.